What you have in this series of stories in the Gospel of Luke is a kind of a story sandwich. And what you heard Nancy read earlier is the meat and cheese, okay? Or for you vegetarians, the sprouts, the tomatoes, the cucumbers, and the avocado. It's the stuff between the bread, okay? But there are stories before and after that create the sandwich. And Luke is masterful about doing this. You've probably heard other storytellers begin a story and then seemingly get distracted and go off in a completely different direction, only to come back to that original story and finish it. That's what's happening here. Jesus has been in the land of the Gerasenes, on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. That means the Gentile side. It's the side where the Decapolis is, the 10 Gentile cities. He's not among his own people there. He is an outsider, a foreigner in essence. And yet he comes and he helps a man who has been tormented by numerous demons. And one way that we know that it's a Gentile part of the country is that Jesus drives the demons into a bunch of pigs. Jews don't keep pigs. So he comes back to his own home country on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, back to the Jewish towns and cities, and he's walking along and he gets interrupted again, this time by a man named Jairus. Now Jairus, we're told, is an important figure, a leader in the synagogue, the head of the ministry table, right? The head of the administrative board. Whatever that title is, he's a man of importance and influence, but he is as helpless to care for his daughter as the man who was possessed by demons was helpless to exorcise his own demons. And in his helplessness, he comes to Jesus and he says, "My daughter, who is 12, is sick. Will you come and help her?" And Jesus doesn't say, "I'm sorry, I have places to go and people to see." He doesn't say, "Make an appointment." He doesn't say, "I'll get with you in the next couple of weeks." He says, "Okay, where's your house?" And Jairus starts leading him toward his home. Well, in the midst of that, Jesus is interrupted again. There is a woman who has been bleeding for 12 years. Now, not only does that mean that she's physically very sick, it also means that she's ritually unclean and has been ritually unclean for 12 years. That means anyone who touches her would be rendered ritually unclean, which probably means that she has not been touched by another human being for a long, long time. She has spent all of her money on doctors trying to get this hemorrhage to stop, and none of them has been successful. And now she's completely helpless. Those who were supposed to know how to help her have failed. And in her desperation and helplessness, she decides if she can just touch the hem of Jesus' garment, she'll be healed. And so in this crowd that he's moving through, going toward the house of the leader of the synagogue, she slips up behind him, she reaches out, and she touches the hem of his garment, and sure enough, the bleeding stops. She has been healed. She has also rendered Jesus ritually unclean in the process. Jesus feels the power go out of him, and he says, "Who touched me?" Well, that's a crazy question. He's moving through a crowd. His disciples say, "What do you mean? Everybody's touching you. You know, they're all bumping." No. Someone touched me because I felt the power go out of me. He's not talking about being jostled in a crowd. He's talking about deliberate touch. And he felt the healing take place. When she hears this, the woman confesses. Now, in confessing, she's making a dangerous move. Okay? Because she has just rendered this healer and rabbi ritually unclean by touching him. But she says, "I've been sick. I've had this hemorrhage. I haven't been able to get cured of it. and I touched your hem, and the bleeding has stopped. Now, Jesus could have responded in a lot of different ways. He could have said, what do you mean touching me without my permission? He could have said, now I have to go get ritually cleansed. He could have said a lot of things, but what does he say? He looks at her and he says, daughter, the exact same word that Jairus used for his daughter when he asked for Jesus' help. He says to this woman, this unclean, sick woman who has just been healed by touching him and rendering him unclean, he says, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. He doesn't even take credit for it. She was helpless. He helped her. She had a need. He met that need. Now we're back to that original story, and we're headed toward the house of Jairus when a group of people come from the house and say, yeah, it's no use. Just don't bother the rabbi anymore. She's dead. Well, Jesus could have said a lot of things. He could have said, well, you don't need me anymore, and wandered off. He could have said, sorry, too bad, and gone his way. But he doesn't. He says, she's not dead. She's just sleeping. Let's move on. They go to the house, and Jesus takes the mother and the father and three of his disciples, and he goes into the room where the girl is, and he touches her. If she is dead, as they presume, he has once again rendered himself ritually unclean. He keeps doing this. He keeps allowing himself to be interrupted by people who have these needs, who are ritually unclean. And he doesn't let that be a barrier to his reaching out to them. He reaches, he takes her hand. He says, little girl, sit up. And when she does, he says, you better get this girl something to eat. She's going to be hungry. Again and again and again and again and again, Jesus is interrupted on his way, usually on his way to do something important. And each time he responds to the need as it presents itself, each and every time. When someone is helpless, he offers help. When someone is in need, he meets that need. You notice any parallels between the story that Jesus told last week and the story he lived this week? He's essentially living out the story of the Good Samaritan. Remember the man going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, fell among thieves, beaten, stripped, robbed, left half dead? Two people pass by and the hated Samaritan stops and helps. Not only does he help, he takes him to an inn, cares for him, and leaves money to see that he's cared for in the future. And when the lawyer says, who was neighbor to the man? Jesus says, what do you say? Who was neighbor to the man? He says, well, the one who showed him compassion. Jesus has been enacting that story every step along the way. And in the process, dealing with a Gentile, on the other side of the lake, dealing with a woman with an issue of blood and dealing with what might be and to all appearances is a dead body, he takes the risk of rendering himself ritually unclean, and he doesn't care. He is embodying the story he tells. He is practicing what he's preaching. He is walking the walk, not just talking the talk. And that's what he calls us to do. Have you ever been on the receiving end of that kind of hospitality? Have you ever felt helpless and somebody stepped in to help you? Even if it wasn't an extreme condition, like a death or severe illness. I remember in 1976, on July 4th, I flew from Chicago, Illinois to Albuquerque, New Mexico. You may recall that was the bicentennial, and we were celebrating 200 years as a country. And I got out to Albuquerque, headed towards Santa Fe, where I was going to be staying, and the people out there didn't seem all that excited. They kept saying, 200 years, my forebears have been here 400, 500 years. Those were the Spanish-speaking ones. The Native American folks, their families had been there from time untold. 200 years was fine to celebrate, but it was kind of a short time. Still pretty young. I was out there helping one of my professors and his spouse set up a center to study families in different cultural settings, which meant that we were often the minority. When we went into the Spanish-speaking villages and the mountains there, we were often the only ones whose language was not Spanish as a first language. When we went to the pueblos, we were clearly visitors. We were clearly foreigners visiting there. I remember one Saturday we went to a dance at Santa Ana Pueblo. Now you understand these dances are held on a regular basis. They're advertised, but there is no starting time given. Because you just arrive and the dance begins when it's ready to begin. Just think if we did that with church. I'd have some angry parishioners. But that's how it works on Santa Ana Pueblo and all the other pueblos. We got there, we waited. When the time was right, the dance began. It was a combination of their traditional Native American dances and their Catholic faith and piety. It was fascinating. We had been there all morning and into the early afternoon. We were starving. Everybody there was hungry. And Santa Ana Pueblo is not near anywhere. Okay? Knowing that, the folks who live in the pueblo lined the square with food so that no one would go hungry. And many of us were invited into their homes. My professor and his wife and I were invited into the home of some people we did not know. We were welcomed, we were treated like family. Now, we weren't helpless, but we did have a need. And they saw that that need was met. That kind of hospitality is not only what Jesus talked about. The hospitality that is so radical, it does not observe the boundaries of Samaritan and Jew. It does not observe the boundaries of ritual purity and clean and unclean. A hospitality that simply reaches out to the one who has a need, and particularly to the one who is helpless. You know, a few years ago, there were these bracelets that said, WWJD, what would Jesus do? Well, we know what Jesus did. We just heard it, didn't we? Whenever there was a need, he met that need. When people came to him who were helpless, he reached out to help them. Just like the people in the pueblo reached out to us. Without any barriers, without any boundaries, without any walls. In fact, he spent his time tearing down walls and teaching his followers how to do that. The walls between Jew and Gentile, slave and free, male and female, you can add your own pairs. And his early followers took that with utter seriousness and welcomed people of all social standings and all backgrounds and all countries. And we kind of caught that idea here, too. If you come into New York Harbor, you'll see a statue, Lady Liberty, or the Statue of Liberty, a gift from the French, a woman standing there with a lamp. And at the base of that, there is a poem by a woman named Emma Lazarus. Emma Lazarus was a Jewish poet of the 19th century. Her father's people came from Germany. They were immigrants from Germany. Her mother's people had come from Portugal before the time of the American Revolution and had been in this country for a long time. But being aware of her immigrant background, she wrote a poem. And that poem is inscribed at the base of the Statue of Liberty. I want to read you a part of it. This is not the whole thing. You can find it. But I want to read you a part of it. Because to me, it describes perfectly what Jesus not only said, but did. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. Did you hear that? Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that Twin Cities frame. And then the woman speaks. Keep ancient lands, you storied pomp, cries with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore, send them, the homeless, the tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. You see, we already know what Jesus did. We already know what he would have us do. The only question is, are we willing to do it?